I can have iced coffee. I can drink iced coffee.
Oh, yeah.
But what I cannot have is hot coffee that turned cold.
Oh, really?
It's not the same to me. Yeah.
Interesting.
Maybe if you threw some ice in there psychologically, I could do it.
When it comes to coffee, I feel like a garbage disposal.
A garbage disposal?
Yeah, like, it doesn't even matter. Like, it's coffee. Mm-hmm. At some point, I know I need it.
Mm-hmm.
That's called addiction.
Yes, it is.
And I am addicted to coffee and the caffeine. I think there are some coffees where I'm just like, this is really good coffee.
Yeah, like a mocha that drowns coffee.
No, chocolate. No. Just like plain, like black coffee. Like drinking, like if it's quality,
uh-huh.
Then you can taste. Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm selling coffee here. But like,
yeah. Yeah. Do you work for like a Folgers?
Yes.
All right. Happy holidays, everybody. This is Podcast for Good. After a brief hiatus, I am back.
Welcome back.
Yes, like Michael Jordan, 1996. Got it in.
Oh, look at you.
You retired
for a moment.
Am I 96 Jordan or am I 2000 Wizards Jordan?
It depends on your quality here, buddy.
I feel like weight-wise, I'm 2000 Jordan.
Oh,
Wizards. Yeah?
Yeah.
I got a little too much weight.
We'll see how many poor decisions you make.
That's right.
Yeah, because if your decisions aren't that great, then you're definitely Wizards Jordan.
2000 Wizards Jordan.
Yeah.
Let's hope I'm 96 Bulls Jordan.
Yeah, and I can't guarantee I'll be Scottie Pippen over here supporting you the whole way.
That's right. Well, you know, you lose the moneymaker. You're losing the voice there.
I am losing the voice. Yeah. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. Tis the season.
That's right. So this is the 14th episode of Podcasts for Good. I guess you could call it a special holiday edition.
I would say so.
I am Program Manager Philip Kerrigan, and of course...
I'm Heather Lucas, the Fiscal and Policy Coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we are talking... we're not going to talk about, like, holidays. Like, I guess we're not going to talk about it, like, where do you put your Christmas tree? Well, we might. But that's not what we did here.
No.
What we're talking about is basically here around the holidays, most of the giving, most of the volunteering, most of anything that's charitable happens right around this time of year. And we sat down with a couple of charities that are family focused.
Yeah.
And asked specific questions about how to make a charity a part of a child's life, how to get children engaged in charity. We interviewed both guests, and I got to tell you, I thought they were very cool, yeah. Engaging guests. One was a gentleman named Keoki Kamanoi from the Family Education and Support Services. He was the Father Engagement Director.
It's an interesting title.
That was cool. We talked a little bit about that with him, and it just went in a whole cool direction.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the founder of Joyful Hands Ministry, Dee Hampton. She also has an incredible story that I think people will really love.
Yeah.
Most of what we're going to talk about, I think, is... before we get into the actual interviews, is the concept of holiday giving.
Yeah.
So we see it.
Oh, absolutely. This is a big time of year for us.
Just like everybody else.
Yep.
It's the reason why people always ask. It's the reason why CFD has their campaign in the last 3 months of the year. Everyone always asks, why is it the last 3 months? Why isn't it the first 3 months? It's just pure statistics. People give... way more frequently during the holiday season than they do at any other point.
I think people feel like it is something that's more accessible during this time of year,
mm-hmm.
and you see more kind of opportunities for giving.
Yeah.
You see more physical representations of it. Like
right.
There would be boxes in stores that are available for people to donate food items, mm-hmm. or clothing or toys,
yeah.
that kind of a thing.
Agreed.
But then also you see people who are collecting money or collecting for a mm-hmm. specific time for
yep.
charity.
Yeah. And Thanksgiving always seems to be one of those big ones where
yeah.
people really identify the fact that they're going to eat a
massive
amount of food.
Yeah.
And then there are these other folks that aren't. I always think that like... part of the reason why the holidays become this sort of bigger thing
yeah.
is that we become awfully reflective at the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah. You become more reflective at the end before the new one starts.
Yeah.
Makes
and
sense.
I think that ends up, we look at our year, we look at the hustle and bustle of everything. And,
yeah.
and like it's really the only time I think during the year where we all kind of consciously attempt to slow down a bit and become a little bit more reflective.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then if you have the opportunity to have family around
mm-hmm.
during the end of the year,
yeah.
you get that kind of reflective family time with
yeah.
them to say, Like, how did things go for you this year?
Yeah.
Or how are you grateful for stuff this year?
Yeah, and we don't dance around the subject. The other thing is that this is a huge time a year for faith-based organizations,
mm-hmm.
and not just Christian organizations.
Yeah.
There are multiple different faith groups that celebrate pretty significant holidays during this time period. And so the folks that go to those particular places, they end up really en masse kind of getting out there and sort of helping.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what religion you are. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a big time of year for everybody to give.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we see that a lot. One of the challenges always comes from engaging younger people.
Yeah.
One of the things that we get into with Keoki from Family Education and Support Services is how kids are naturally empathetic.
Yeah.
And we see that, but then sometimes I don't know that it translates all the time to kids getting out and helping.
Well, you see, too, like, I was reading a little bit about how to get kids involved in mm-hmm. charitable giving, and he brought up that, kids are empathetic. And for whatever reason, like, there's a point in a kid's life where they kind of stop being so empathetic for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it may just be, like, a learning process, you know, like, as they're growing and getting to become from kid to an adult, mm-hmm. like, that kind of learning process, it slows down for them for that.
I
but,
know.
Like, they ramp up their empathy and their, like, charitable ideas and giving towards others. It gets ramped up again after they get to be, like, 7, 8, 9. That's when it starts to get big again.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be something where kids get to experience charitable giving and volunteering with family.
Yeah.
That may be a really great time to get them involved again.
Yeah, I always think about why I wanted to do nonprofit work.
Yeah.
And I always point back to when I was about 12 or 13.
Uh-huh.
My mom, we went to a Lutheran church in Lakewood, and my mom scheduled some time to work out of the Union Gospel Mission in Tacoma.
Okay.
So just downtown Tacoma.
Sure.
And it was going to be 4 straight Sundays where we were going to do it.
Yeah.
And I remember being nervous about it, number one, because I had never been around people like that before. I'd never been around homeless folks or anything like that.
Yeah.
And the second thing was, I remember being disappointed because football was on Sundays.
Sure.
And I wanted to watch that instead.
Well, it's a weekend, too.
Yeah. I already gave you an hour at church. Now I got to go to this other thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Come on, Mom.
Yeah. God, Mom, have a little bit more. Gosh, think about things. Think about my schedule.
Yeah, seriously, Mom.
But I do remember it was almost instant. I mean, first of all, I remember exactly what the head of the soup kitchen looked like and sounded like, and I remember being nervous because he was a really big guy, and I thought, is he going to treat me like a kid? And he was just this very warm and open person. And then I just instantly sort of, it hit me right then and there, like, physically I was making a difference.
Yeah.
Like, it was actually happening right there.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't some big sort of concept. The fact that you could see the suffering right in front of you, and that you could just even for a second do something about it.
Yeah.
And I think that was the first time I ever really got sort of turned on by the idea of like, okay, well, I could do this sort of thing for a living.
Yeah.
You know, like, help people. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure it's easy, too, to be like, as a kid, to get to physically volunteer to see the connection that you're making with people, because you can't avoid people at that point. Like, if you can online giving, you're not interacting with a human, but if you're giving somebody an item that was donated, then you're making that connection to them with their eyes, with your words.
I know.
Yeah.
And kids react to things that are presented to them in the simplest terms.
Yeah.
So if you ask a kid, if someone's hungry, what do?
You feed
them. They'll go, well, you feed them.
Yeah.
Right? It's adults who then politicize everything and trip over themselves and get in the way.
Like, you're missing the point.
Right.
They're still hungry.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think if we actually thought a little bit more like kids from time to time, where we're like, yeah, if he's hungry, I'll give him food.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
We probably could get a lot more done.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
crack it up, make it a little simpler.
Right. That's right. So hit me with the question of the podcast.
So when it comes to holidays,
mm-hmm.
You and your family, you celebrate Christmas.
That's correct.
So, what kind of Christmas traditions do you have?
So the main Christmas tradition we have is we go out and we cut down a real tree.
Really?
Well, yeah, we go to a real Christmas tree farm. I have my real saw. And
do you struggle like?
Oh, I struggle like every father struggles to cut down this stupid Christmas tree.
Okay, because, like, I mean, you'd expect
branches in my face and, like, you know, trying to get underneath.
They're
it.
Like, hold
my
on,
knee
I got
hurts.
This.
Absolutely, yeah. But then you play cool.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
And your kids have no idea. And then when they get to be older and they have this tradition, they're like, "How did he do it?"
No. So it's funny because my wife grew up in a household that was a artificial tree.
Sure.
From the day after Thanksgiving. Like, that puppy went up, like, they unveiled it the day after Thanksgiving, right? My family grew up real tree, like, 8th or 9th of December.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Because you want the tree to, like, be dead by the time Christmas happened. So we had to find this compromise, because she was not giving up on the fact that she needed it early.
Yeah.
And I was not giving up on the fact that it had to be a real Christmas tree.
Yeah.
So we basically have reached compromise where we do go the weekend after Thanksgiving. We find as fresh a Christmas tree as we can, and then it usually like outlives it lives itself out probably first second of January.
Okay.
And that's the main tradition that the Kerrigan household does.
Nice.
Yeah.
For my house, we were a real tree family. Mm-hmm. Until, I don't know, probably like I was 15 or 16, and my mom was like, "Let's just get a Christmas tree that's artificial. Yeah. It'll last for the next 15 years."
Yeah.
I think that's the Christmas tree we still have. So it's lasted a little
still
longer.
Still fresh,
quote unquote. But yeah, like it's decorations in my house. Lots of decorations.
Yeah.
My mom.
I love it.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, like, Christmas isn't my favorite holiday, mm-hmm. but it is, like, my mom loves the decorations.
She does.
So she's got, like, the porcelain kind of little statues that you paint yourself, you know. Yeah, the fake snow to
that's
it.
Good.
You make it all shiny and glittery and stuff. So, yeah, those go out. Then there's, we would cut snowflakes.
Oh,
yeah, that was a big thing.
That's
like,
clever.
To this day, I still know how to fold paper in a proper way to cut it. No, it's super awesome. It's super cool. You just like cut little itty bitty holes in them.
I did some for my son.
Yeah.
For his because that was one of the activities you had to do.
Yeah.
So that was one of his pieces of homework. He was cutting his.
A snowflake?
A snowflake, and I was cutting mine. Mine were just horrific. They were terrible. They looked like a guy had folded the paper incorrectly and just cut a bunch of holes in it.
See, I think part of it is, like, you gotta know. Like, they can't be massive.
That's right.
You can't have massive snowflakes.
I know.
You gotta be willing to cut a lot of paper off. That's really the secret.
Good tip for those snowflake cutters out there.
Yeah. Cut a lot of paper off your snowflake.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So we're gonna roll into Keoki Kawanoi from the Family Education and Support Services. He is the Father Engagement Director. Here is our interview with Keoki. All right, so we are here with Keoki Kawanoi.
You got it.
Did I nail it?
You nailed it.
Nice job.
He is the Father Engagement Director for Family Education and Support Services. Thank you for joining us, Keoki.
Thanks for inviting me. This is great.
Yeah. So we have had you guys on the podcast before for a caregivers podcast we did. But this has a different flavor to it. And why don't you kind of remind folks what it is that Family Education and Support Services do?
Well, first off, we get confused a lot with Family Support Center, which is another great local organization. But Family Education and Support Services, we basically, we help children by wrapping a blanket of support around their caregivers. And so their caregivers can be their biological parents, their non-biological parents, it could be their grandparents or aunts and uncles. We have a kinship care program to support that. Or also their foster parents.
Mm-hmm.
So by wrapping around services around the people who care for the kids, we kind of like amplify the care and support for the child.
Yeah.
And that's basically what we do.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And I'm interested in your title, Father Engagement Director. Can you explain? That sounds cool. What do you do?
Yeah, actually, it's very cool. I love my job. So I actually met Shelley Willis, the executive director of Family Education and Support Services, when I was a single dad and I had primary custody of my daughter, when she is two.
Wow.
Now she's 18 mm-hmm. and going to Western.
Nice.
Ah,
yeah,
cool.
So pretty right happy on. About that. I had taken a class. First off, it's incredible. Family Education and Support Services, we have a wide range of classes. It's kind of mind-boggling to me. So we have my classes, father engagement classes, mm-hmm. dynamic dads, and bringing back the dads. We also have an impact of domestic violence class. When parents are going through a divorce, they're required to take a Consider the Children class. And for some reason, we also have a Zumba class.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, you throw know, exercise is important. It's part of, you know, you're staying healthy. So.
Yeah, that's yeah. awesome.
So I do the fathering class, and I teach at Centralia College. We just started teaching our classes at the Thurston County Jail.
Hmm.
I'll be teaching my class at Green Hill Juvenile Facility. We also teach the classes in Shelton, and it's basically a class for some dads come to the class because they're court mandated, but a lot of them just come to the class because they want more tools in their parenting toolbox,
mm-hmm.
which is what we give them. But the Dynamic Dads class is more of a lot of times dads will come to the class and they're expecting a lecture about what they did wrong
sure.
and what to do yeah. instead, and that's not what our class is about. Our class is more about self-awareness and self-reflection. Basically, whatever you want your kids to be, you have to be, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's more about parenting yourself first and then being able to parent your kids.
Yeah.
So, and I love that class because we're constantly getting epiphanies or aha moments in the class. It just, it's
yeah.
beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm now, sure, like, you see it on somebody's face, that yeah. moment where you're just
oh,
like,
yeah.
gotcha.
Yeah, uh-huh.
yeah
that's
I
cool.
was... recently at Cedar Creek Correctional Facility teaching a class, and we were talking about love languages. And it was amazing for these guys. And basically what we're teaching them is there are basically five different ways that people give and express love.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that there are that many ways that people prefer to receive love.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that they learned was that sometimes, like if you're in a relationship with somebody, and you're giving them, you're speaking your love language to them, that might not be their love language.
Sure.
Yeah. You know?
And the light bulbs just went off. Like
yeah.
One
yeah.
guy's like, oh, he's just started crying. He was
wow.
like, this whole time she was trying to show me she loved me in this way, and I totally didn't get it. And I was trying to show her my love through positive affirmation, and what
yeah.
she really wanted was acts of service. Why didn't you tell me this 30 years ago?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's beautiful. But one of the most moving ones was I was at Green Hill Facility. That's a juvenile facility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think you can be up to age 21.
That's a Green Hill is a hardcore, intimidating place.
Yeah, it's crazy.
When you
pull
up.
Well, I shouldn't say crazy. But one of the issues I found there was when I got there, those are boys.
Yeah.
They're boys.
Right.
But the number one thing they talk about all the time is being a man. Yeah. Got to be a man, got to be a man, got to be a man.
Yeah.
But they don't know what that is.
Right.
Yeah.
And
right.
so they rely on, they just look at each other to see what being a man is.
Yeah.
And so when you're a room full of people who don't know, you know, and they're just trying to play off each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
it's hard.
It's hard.
Yeah.
And so I was in that class, and we do our introductions, and one of the guys there, he's like 19, he's going to be in there for a while, and he basically said, you know, my dad was a criminal, I'm a criminal. My dad went to jail, I'm in jail. My dad ran out on me, I'm probably going to run out on my son.
Mm.
And I told him, you're not your dad.
Mm-hmm.
You can be whoever you want to be.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to be him, you can be somebody, you can be you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the class was like 2 hours. And I'm keeping my eye on him the whole time, and you could see the cogs turning,
mm-hmm.
you know. And at the end of class, he comes up to me and he goes, I really don't have to be my dad.
Yeah,
no,
wow.
You can be whoever you want to be.
Yeah.
And he had talked about how he expected to just go to prison and just live his life in prison.
Right.
The next class, he came back and he had a plan. He was like, you know, I could get out for good behavior if I do that. I love to cook. I want to teach my son how to cook. We're gonna get we're gonna get a food truck.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. So he went from a state of complete hopelessness and accepting
that nothing can change to
having a future.
Right. Having a future with his boy. So I love it.
yeah, that's fabulous. I mean, I love the whole idea. Like, that's one thing I always find, because I have kids. One thing that I always find is that, like, fathers especially, we get this incredible leeway from our kids that we don't even recognize. You don't have to be nailing it all the time.
Right.
You really kind of just have to be there. Because yeah, I think that sometimes happens to me. Like, I almost get this sense, like, my kids go, "It's all right, Dad. We know that you're trying."
They're really young too.
But they, you know, I mean, like I have seen it. I've seen, like, dads, you know, struggle a bit with that, or think like I got to be perfect or whatever. Yeah. And it's just not the case. You really just have to kind of just be there.
Yeah,
and like be engaged a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
And realize you're okay. Yeah. It's okay if you're not like a perfect individual. Right. Do you cater to mostly single fathers, or is your demographic kind of pretty specific? Like you said, Green Hill and sort of gentlemen like that, or do you even help other folks in the community?
Oh yeah, we help everybody, and in fact, that's how you actually bring up a big thing. There's kind of like there seems to be a stigma that people think that if they're in a parenting class, then there's something wrong with their parenting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the guys that I get, there are some guys that are court mandated, but like I said, most of they're just regular guys who just want to know. And,
yeah.
You know, that's the thing. I think parenting is the most important job in the world, but there's no schooling for it. You don't have to take classes.
You don't have to qualify.
Yeah, there's no certification, you know.
Yeah.
You have other jobs, like trade jobs, you know, you have to... Yeah, continuing education. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a newsletter.
Yeah.
You get a newsletter with the most update information about your job. But parenting, there's nothing.
Yeah, and there's no manual.
Yeah, there's no manual. And I have a lot of guys that come out of the class go like, "This should be a class in high school." And
it should absolutely be a class in high school.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. Yeah. Wow. That's
so we run the gamut. Anybody who wants to come.
Yeah. Cool. So it might be hard for young children to understand. So we're talking a little bit as well about holidays, and I think this kind of goes in really well, especially like when you're talking about the projection that maybe even fathers have that if you got to be a man this way and whatsoever. So one of those stigmas that comes a lot of times, unfortunately, with males is the idea of giving.
Yeah.
So our demographics skew completely in one direction. Our giving demographics are 75% female and 25% male.
Yeah.
And if you walk into a room when we train volunteers, if there's 25 people in the room, 23 of them are going to be female, and 2 of them are going to be male.
Including him.
Including me. Typically, I'm the token. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that always, to me, brings up an interesting point. I think that goes along the lines of, like, it's ingrained early that, like, to sort of care on that level or to showcase that is somehow... emasculating.
Right.
So what do you think parents or guardians could say or do to kids to understand, like, the importance of giving and sort of the really emotional satisfaction that comes with it?
Wow, that's great. And there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it was perfect. So first of all, when you look at the research, we know that children are already wired for it. When we talk about charity, we're basically talking about empathy,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. And children are wired for empathy, they just don't know that that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of research that shows that toddlers from age 3 years old on up, they will display empathy.
Yeah.
Babies will display empathy. When they hear another child cry in a nursery, for instance, they'll start crying in sympathy for that child. When you get older, toddlers will give, when they see somebody who's sad or having a hard time, they will give up their own comfort object. And a lot of times you see them, whatever their parents do to comfort them, you will see them try
to do that's totally true.
So they're already wired and ready to go. They just need role modeling and direction. And the other big thing about that is Professor Gottman at the University of Washington does a lot of really great work over the last 30 years, and he said that the parents who, like you said, are engaged or there, are available, and are emotionally available, are able to help their kids develop their own sense of empathy. And a lot of research shows that dads are particularly good at that. And here's an example of how that works. In my class, I talk about how dads' particular style of play develops a lot of different skills in their kids. And I tell them, you know, dads roughhouse with their kids in a very unique way. And I've had dads come to my class and say, I was told not to roughhouse. I was told this and that. And I tell them, no, actually, we now know that a lot of, well, let me back up. So Forbes magazine recently said that the number one indicator of success in business is social and emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then there's a recent study, I read it, I think, in the Seattle Times last year, that the number one indicator for college success isn't their grades, but their social and emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And dads have a particular input in that, and it comes out in our in the way we play with our kids. So I've talked with a lot of kids at Green Hill and things like that. When they get into situations where they end up fighting, when we roll back and see what was happening, one of their biggest issues is they don't pick up on social cues. And they can't pick up on social cues because they don't recognize facial expressions.
Sure.
So, and I was just talking to a teenager just a couple weeks ago about, he was saying that he doesn't get sarcasm. And unless the person, so, and you know,
kids, boys in particular, one of the, what we joke around is by just ripping in on each other, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
And so this guy was getting into some trouble until he realized that his fights would start because he didn't realize the person that was joking. So when they say something, he thought they were being mean to him, and he reacted, which how he thought was, you know, right way to react. He didn't understand that they were just joking at the time.
So when dads are in front of their kids and we're wrestling and roughhousing, one of the things the kids are learning is to understand facial features. That's why we have eyebrows, actually. Biologically, it's to help us distinguish our different facial expressions.
You have a nice pair there. So,
and so kids play with their dads. They watch their dads. They see the different facial features he's expressing. He understands that. And then that goes into understanding social cues. And then understanding social cues develops their own social and emotional intelligence.
Okay.
And so, you know, yeah, you're right. There's this stereotype that dads, you know, they're like the Vulcans of society.
Yeah.
No, you know, no stoic, emotion. No emotion. Right. But our kids learn how to express and understand other people's emotions by playing with their dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that can easily lead to more social empathy as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that charity is social empathy. Looking at another person and saying, oh, you know, I understand where they're coming from, or I see where they need help.
Yeah.
What can I do to help them?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's take a break and talk a little bit about Friday Flicks. Looking for fun and inspiring ways to connect with different charities in our program? The CFD has got you covered. Every Friday during the annual giving campaign, the Combined Fund Drive will release a special video highlighting one of our member charities and what they do for the community. The videos are filled with amazing stories of inspiring people who are helping those in need every day. Check out each video for special content and different ways to give. For all our videos, visit www.cfd.wa.gov/cfd/videos. And back to the show.
As far as older kids, it's a little easier for them to understand, hey, you know, I have it great, and other people don't. So as when it comes to a younger child, what do you think is the easiest way to get a child involved in charity?
Well, actually, I see it at the FES office all the time. We have, you know, we have a variety of programs. One of the programs we have, it's called PCAP.
Yeah.
It's a Parents and Child Assistance Program. And it's actually a program that's come out of the University of Washington. And it's for moms who have children from pregnancy to age 3. And so their caseworker stays with them for 3 years.
Okay. And
kind of like provides a bridge of support, helps them with a variety of things that they need help with. And we have a room for clothes and different supplies, diapers, things like that. And I've walked by that room many, many, many times, and I've heard, you know, the parents are in there, and sometimes they have their little kids. And one of the things that just touches my heart is you hear a kid pick up something and say, you know, so-and-so could use this.
Mm.
This would be good for so-and-so. Yeah. Can we get this for so-and-so? So I would say help kids. How to help kids think about charity. Give them opportunities to do that. You know, my kids' elementary school periodically has field trips to the food bank.
Okay.
And my kids, when they're older now, but when they would talk about it for weeks.
Yeah.
We did this,
right.
We did that.
Right.
And it was they were surrounded by other people giving and seeing that their efforts were helping families.
Yeah. You know?
And in fact, I remember a few years back, I was talking to one of the dads, or both of our kids were in kindergarten, and he said, "I'm worried about this upcoming field trip to the food bank." And I said, "You know why?" And he goes, "Because me and my son go to the food bank."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I don't want him to, you know, to feel.
Right.
You know, whatever. And so the field trip happened, and he came back, and I'm kind of talking about it, and he goes, "Yeah, so how'd that go?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm like, great. He felt like he was giving back."
Nice.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, let's see. To recap, just getting your kids involved in their community is enough. And then when you walk around, just asking them to feel, you know, what do you think that feels like?
Yeah.
What do you think, you know? Yeah. And then the other thing is acknowledging every time, because our kids will say and do things that are charitable or empathetic, and focusing on that. One of the things we talk about in our class is, you know, whatever you focus on, that's what you get. And so if you focus on your child's empathy, it's called emotion coaching, you know, coaching your kids on feeling or trying to feel what other kids are going through or other kids are feeling,
sure.
Like, pointing it out every time. And reassuring them that they're in a part of a community where there's a give and take. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So, what's the best Christmas present a charity could receive?
What's the best Christmas present a charity? Wow.
These have got to be the oddest set of questions.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We have a Zumba class.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I know, right? Yeah.
All right, well, what was the question again?
What do you think the best present a charity could receive is? What's the best Christmas present? And I mean, you can say money.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always money and time.
Yeah.
Money and time. We have a lot of volunteers that come through, and we could always use more. Definitely money. I was talking to one of my coworkers, you know, about the combined fund drive and how I don't know specifically where that money goes, but I do see the results.
Yeah.
I have guys in class who, you know, your guys' charitable giving have allowed them to be able to come to the class.
That's awesome. I think people will love to hear that.
Well, and it's great because then these guys happen to be the ones who impact other guys the most. So it's like a multiplier.
Yeah,
and I realized, you know, we scholarship this dad, and he had an incredible wealth of wisdom, and he shared it with us, and it improved multiple lives, and that would never have happened if we weren't able to have given him the scholarship to come in and do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that definitely, and I've seen it happens over and over. I think there's one time where the monies that you provided were able to give like our books. I mean, our class costs money, and materials cost money, and it's a struggle to figure out ways around that. So programs like yours help. You know, I was saying earlier that we wrap a blanket of service around kids. but you guys provide the threads that weave that blanket. If we didn't, we would have, it would be a raggedy, holy blanket instead of this giant, thick quilt of services that we could provide.
Well, our donors will love to hear that. Yeah. They love that. They love that stuff.
Wow. Thank you, guys. That's
awesome. Yeah, you touched on it a little bit, but let's say somebody is listening to this podcast and they want to give to family education and support services. Mm-hmm. So what do donations do for your organization? Like you said, they buy books, they buy supplies, they help for scholarships.
They help for scholarships. We have programs where it's a parenting class, but what happens is the parents come in with their families, we collectively all have a meal together, and then the kids go with another instructor, and they do a project while the parents have the time to do the parenting class.
Sure.
And so that covers meals that kids might not have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let alone meals where they're sitting together with the rest of their family.
Yeah.
And then childcare, so that the parents can have the class and know that their kids are going to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All those things come from the charitable giving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just one class.
Yeah.
Three or four things that your charities help out with for just one class. And I think we have like, I can't begin to, I'm not counting Zumba, but we have like 7, 8, 9, 10 classes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's awesome.
So since it's Christmas time, there are a lot of organizations that have like Christmas-specific, holiday-specific programs or events or anything. Do you guys have anything coming up that you'd like to highlight?
I wish I knew the answer to that question.
Well, even for the upcoming year, like around the corner.
Oh, well, you know, actually, we are moving.
Yeah?
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are moving into a new building that's being built, and it's going to be called the Resiliency Center.
Oh, okay.
And so I think we have I'm terrible with this part, but so we have a capital campaign that's coming up to pay for that building.
Sure.
And this is, so it's everything that we're doing in a central location where people can come and not just, you know, have classes, get some counseling. We're also hoping to have laundry facilities, and other organizations are going to be partnering with us in that building. So yeah,
nice.
We have a capital campaign for the construction of the Resiliency Center next year.
Where is the Resiliency Center going to be located?
So there is, it's next to SBSCC.
Okay.
There's Mottman Road, and then there's that Johnson Drive.
Okay.
On the way to Thurston County Family and Juvenile Court. There's a plot of land next to the bus barn for the schools, right there.
Okay. Nice. Nice.
All right, yeah. I know where that is. Awesome. Yeah.
It's going to be awesome, and we definitely, I'm glad you, like, helped me along. I would totally have lost that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Kaoki, thank you so much for coming and talking to us. It's really interesting to hear about what you guys do specifically with fathers and how that helps. So, thanks a ton.
Thank you. And I just one more thing about fathers, and one of the reasons why I think father engagement, all our things are important, including Zumba, but father engagement in particular. I periodically look at the research of father engagement, and when you look at, and like you said, you don't even have to be a perfect father. Mm-hmm. You just have to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that is true. And we know that children whose fathers aren't engaged in their lives are 5 times more likely to commit suicide, mm-hmm. 9 times more likely to drop out of school, 10 times more likely to abuse chemical substances,
wow.
14 times more likely to commit rape, 20 times more likely to end up in prison, and 32 times more likely to run away from home.
That's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. So I get a lot of guys who come to my class, and they're like, they've been told, and they've internalized this idea that their kids don't really need them. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, that's so not true.
Yeah.
Don't let anybody tell you that kids don't need their dads.
Wow.
They do.
Well, I have one last question then.
Okay.
Do you see like hope, you know, in the future? I mean, is it something you see positive change happening? Because I mean, I think that with what you're doing, specifically for the younger, for like younger males, is supremely important. And if we go down a road where as many men are missing from their kids' lives as currently are, we could continue to have real problems. Do you see a turnaround happening?
I do. I do. I see it. I do see a turnaround. You know, we get into a lot of discussion about brain architecture and behavior. One of the things we talk about is neuroplasticity, and that is the ability of the brain to adapt to changing circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I see that happening in society as a whole. The dads that are coming to my class, they are getting it, and they're talking to their and it's, yes, there is hope, mm-hmm. because once dads know how important they are, you can't stop them.
Yeah.
You can't stop them from being actively involved.
Yeah.
You know, I had a guy, he started class, and he was all my dads grumble on the first day. They're, it's always like, I don't need this.
Well, a new class, too. Like,
yeah, I got to do the class.
Especially if it's ordered by somebody to do it. Yeah. Like, you don't want to be told what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And so this guy was like, I already bought my ticket to Florida. You know, I'm getting less visitation, and, you know, everybody's telling me as long as she has one parent, she'll be fine, so she doesn't need me. And he stayed through the whole class, and he understands now that he's not with her every day like he'd like to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to be. It really is a matter of quality time versus quantity time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he is fully engaged in his daughter's life, and she knows. This is one of the things about kids that is a challenge for parents, all right? When kids look at their parents, they have three questions that they're constantly asking their parents. Unfortunately, we don't know that they're asking these questions.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, they just look at our facial expression, and that answers it for them.
Okay.
And those three questions are, do I deserve to be loved? Hmm. Am I worthy? And do I have a future? And they're constantly looking at us to answer the question. Now, unfortunately, you know, we walk through the door, and they're asking the questions, and we don't realize that, you know. And they find the answer in our expression.
Wow.
But usually we're not, you know, we're like, oh.
Well, yeah. You're thinking about,
you know, we're thinking about all these other things, so they don't know it. But when we understand that and we're actively engaged, then we can answer those questions for the kids. And it only takes 5 seconds.
Yeah.
You know? So this guy was like, you know, I get to see her 4 times a week. And before all he was saying was, I only get to see her 4 times a week. But now he says, those 4 times are the most important, best times in my whole life.
Nice.
And I'm going to make them the most important. I'm going to let her know that they're the most important. And that's what counts. And that's what's going. That's what gives me hope.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's a heck of a way to end it.
Yeah, I think
Thank you, Kayoki. I appreciate it. It was really nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. I was worried I'd be like,
No. I think you nailed it.
I think so. Yeah. Good.
Awesome.
I think so too.
Awesome. All right.
All right. Well, thank you.
All right. So that was Kayoki Kawanoi from the Family Education and Support Services. We are going to roll straight into our interview with the founder of Joyful Hands Ministry, Dee Hampton. So here is our interview with her now. Okay, so we are here with the founder of Joyful Hands Ministry, Dee Hampton, a.k.a. the boss. All right?
Yep.
That's what your people call you. So Dee, thanks for coming on the podcast to talk to us for a few minutes about what you guys do.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So first, can you give us a little bit of a history of Joyful Hands Ministry? What sort of organization you founded?
We do a breakfast street feed every Saturday morning down on the streets of Olympia, downtown Olympia on State and Franklin.
Mm.
And we're in an open parking lot. We're not in a building.
Mm-hmm.
We set up tents outside. We set up at 8 o'clock on Saturday mornings. We provide breakfast. We've been doing it for the last 5 years. We've been there. We're there every Saturday morning, whether it's raining, snowing, whatever
nice.
The weather
wow.
is, we're there.
Wow.
And that's what our families have come used to. They know that we're going to be there. We're dependable, and they depend on us. But we don't just provide breakfast. We provide, hopefully, hope and love.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that they can ask me for my phone number. I give them my phone number. They can
wow.
call me. I set them up with blankets and other stuff
yeah.
as
yeah.
well.
How did it get started? What made you do it? What made you start the work?
I had a daughter, And she didn't always like to listen to my mom. She stayed with my mom a lot because I lived in California, and she ended up on the streets because my mom kept fighting. And she just hung out on the streets of the city of Olympia. And when I moved here, I asked her to come live with me. She did off and on, but she had always wanted to stay on the streets. And I'm like, thinking, well, why you want to stay down there? And she'd always talk about the homeless people and this and that, but why you want to stay down there? And I had a different perception at that time of what homeless people were. I thought they were all drug addicts and different things.
Yeah.
And then November 21st, almost 12 years ago, it is 12 years ago now, my baby was killed in a car accident.
Wow.
Something that you never should ever, ever hear as a parent, that your child has been killed in a car accident.
Yeah.
And that afternoon, people kept calling me and wanting me to come downtown. I'm like, no.
Wow.
But I ended up at CYS, and these kids there said, come on, sit down. We want to tell you about your daughter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I know about my daughter. No, you don't. Really, you don't. They started telling me stories how she was helping them off heroin. She'd find them places to live. She would provide them for food, and 14-year-old kids, she didn't want to see them there. So she was doing a lot more, and she was living a lot different than what I thought she was doing.
Sure.
And then the kids said, come on, we're going to tell you us our stories. Now, you should always listen to people's stories. And I heard a few. One young man said he saw his dad shoot his mom in front of him and then shot himself. And family members blamed him and tossed him around, and he ended up on the street.
Mm.
So one story after another, and my heart just turned, and I knew there was something I needed to do. And a couple of years later, Joyful Hands started.
Wow.
And we've been going ever since.
So for the breakfasts, you don't have a focus for who comes. Like, it can be anybody who is, like, needing food, needing some kind of place to go on Saturdays?
We don't even discriminate if you're not homeless.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If you're hungry and you show up at my downtown area, I'm going to feed you.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have no criteria. Mm-hmm. You come and you're hungry, we're going to feed you at breakfast. So we feed a pretty good breakfast at that.
Yeah.
I heard it's one of the best ones in Olympia.
Yeah, word of mouth, right?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. So chances are you have met people in that service that have impacted you quite a bit.
Definitely,
yeah.
Definitely. And, you know, there's times that I'm like, when I first started, I was like, am I really making a difference?
Yeah.
And one young man, and I was thinking this one night, and when I was walking across the parking lot, and this young man goes, and they call me Mama D, and they say, hey, Mama D, come here. I said, what? He said, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you, your smile every week and your hug every week changes my life. He said, I was going to commit suicide the other day, but you came up and you smiled and you hugged me and you told me it was going to be okay. And that love is what kept me here.
Mm.
And he's still here. Now he lives in Texas, but he's still around.
Nice.
That is so cool.
There's different people. They have told me, you know, you just don't know. You just being here, what it does for us.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard for people to understand sometimes, like, the impact that you have if you don't get that kind of feedback. Sometimes you think, I'm not doing that much.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's, you know, I heard on the radio one time when the Union Gospel Mission was talking about what it really was. It wasn't just about the food and this or that. It's about being human and companionship and that connection.
Absolutely.
That human connection.
Couldn't,
and that's what we provide, is that human connection.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've now mingled with about two or three different charities facing homelessness, Every Monday Matters, the charities like that. The Soup Ladies is another one.
Yeah.
They kind of do the exact same thing that you're talking about and what you guys do, which is this very simple act, but there's these connections that happen and this worth that the person who's receiving gets out of it that I don't think we ever really can quantify.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool.
Unless you're really doing it, no.
Yeah.
No.
So let's talk a little bit about engaging kids and even adults in sort of the work that you do, because what you're talking about is for some folks, and especially for folks with kids, a radical idea, waking up on a Saturday and going downtown and feeding homeless people, right?
Especially at 8 o'clock in the morning.
How do you feel like you can get parents or guardians and kids engaged in sort of charitable service like that? What do you think?
They seem to find me.
Yeah.
I have I have a youth group from the church, two youth groups now coming from different churches, and they bring down their kids, and they're great. They just go in and they just start talking to people and start mm-hmm. loving on people. And just not too long ago, I guess there was a law that was passed, and they went to their city council and started fighting for the homeless. I said, yes, they're listening yeah. to me every Saturday. Yeah. They're hearing that. I always tell them when they're down there, one smile, a simple smile will change somebody's life. Or just to say hello would yeah. change their life. And these kids are actually radically out there doing it. And we have parents who said, hey, my kids took their allowances and they bought Easter buckets and filled them with candy and brought them down for the kids that are on the streets.
Yeah.
The kids are great. They love to come down. And their parents yeah. are like, you know, we just want to show our kids what it's like to give back and what mm-hmm. what. How blessed they are, really,
yeah.
and the community out there that's not blessed, how kids are out there that are not blessed, and they respond wonderfully.
Yeah.
You know, they're okay. just down there smiling at people, talking to people, just loving on
yeah.
people, and our families like it because it gives them a sense of home and community, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, they, like I said, they seem to find me,
that's awesome.
But I welcome anybody with their kids to come down and,
yeah.
and serve on a Saturday.
That's
nice.
Fabulous.
Nice.
That's fabulous.
So, like in this day and age, most people, if they're going to give money, they do it a lot online. Like, it kind of seems to be like a normal thing just to give online. So, how important do you think it is for parents to bring their kids to a physical location like your Saturday breakfast? Bring them down there and get them engaged to see and to volunteer.
Because they see the community of people that are hurting. And what I think it really what really the kids see
mm-hmm.
is the other kids that are just like them
mm-hmm.
but don't have a home. You know, I had just recently on Thanksgiving, I had a lady bring her son down, and his heart broke by the time he left because he had no idea that there was anything like that and there was kids out there. And I just know that in the future, this kid is going to be out there doing something for the homeless.
Yeah.
But he's just like, his mom said, he just like tears because it broke. And he's only like 9, 10 years
yeah.
old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what it's about. That's our future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to get them out there, engaged, and see what's going on out there in their community. Because I know that they're going to make an impact in the future. I've seen
yeah.
it so many times over and over when the kids come down. They're the ones who's going to carry this on further.
Yeah. We've asked this, of our last charity, and money can be the answer to this question, by the way. What's the best Christmas present a charity could receive?
Money?
Yeah. That's okay. That's an acceptable answer.
And volunteers, we're going to be down there Christmas morning.
Wow.
And so that we're lacking volunteers on Christmas morning. Of course, you
okay.
know, people are down with their families,
mm-hmm.
so we're... Come on down.
Bring yeah.
volunteers and money, yes.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
So let's say someone listens to our podcast today and they hear about your organization. So, and they want to give to Joyful Hands Ministries because of the podcast. What do donations do for you guys?
It's everything. That's how we survive. A lot of mm. times if we don't get donations, a lot of us on my team, well, every one of us on our team take money out of our pockets and buy the food because we can feed anywhere from 150 to 300 people or more on a given Saturday.
Wow.
In the wintertime, it's a little bit less than the summertime because they're coming from everywhere in the summer.
Sure.
But it means everything because that's how we survive is through donations.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if we don't, we take it out of our pockets, but we
right.
make it work every Saturday.
Right. Do you have any sort of initiatives or events or things coming up that you think people might be interested in?
Just Christmas morning.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
that's good.
We're
yeah.
probably going to be gearing up next year for more events, but mm-hmm. right now it's just we're trying to concentrate on getting Christmas taken care of.
Yeah.
And what's the location you're at again?
We are on State and Franklin, so we're adjacent from the Olympia Transit Center and across the street from Old School Pizza.
Okay.
So we're in an open parking lot. There's an apartment right near us,
mm-hmm.
right, matter of fact, right in the middle of our parking lot. And we're close. I think this was the Lake Fair office, and that's
okay.
right next to us.
Okay.
But you can't miss us because we have three tents out there, and one of them is a blue government tent.
Okay. Okay.
I won't tell you who the candidate was. It was years ago, but
that's hilarious.
I don't know where it came
yeah.
from, but we
yeah.
managed to get it donated to us.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That it's hard to miss.
So for people who are interested in something like that, What time does it start? You said 8 o'clock. Even on Christmas, it'll be 8 o'clock?
On Christmas, it's going to be 9.
And how long does it usually last?
Until we run out of food or until 11
okay.
o'clock.
Okay.
So
whichever comes first.
It's usually food.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. Yeah, okay, usually. Excellent. That's great. That's great. And what was, if you don't mind us asking, what was your daughter's name?
Sarah.
Sarah. Well, I think Sarah would be pretty proud of the work that you're doing.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of her friends come through there. You know, just to say hello, or the girl I was talking about with the little boy, that was her best friend's sister.
Wow.
And her best friend, her brother is no longer here either with us. They're both in heaven together on one of their many adventures, but nice. It was awesome to have her there because they the two best friends, and this is why it got started. So.
Yeah. Well, Dee, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate you talking a little bit about Joyful Hands, and good luck.
Thank
with
you.
Everything. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. I love what we do. So
awesome. Thanks. Okay, so those were two, I think, those were two really interesting interviews.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I really liked both of them.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny, though, because, like, at first, I mean, we were talking about, like, the whole idea of the podcast was to talk about getting children engaged in charity, but I found through both interviews, I didn't want to talk so much about that as I did about what they both do.
I know. Oh, well, it started almost instantly for me with Keoki. I'm like, when you told me Keoki was the father engagement director, at first I thought you meant he's the father of the engagement director for some reason.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought too.
Because I was like, who would be called the father engagement director?
Yeah.
And so when we asked him that question, that just was like, I want to talk to you about that for the next 35 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, super motivational for fathers out there.
How you feel motivated, I'm sure.
Definitely. Nice. I would absolutely take his course.
There you go.
Yeah, because I mean, I think that like a lot of times we're flailing, us even fathers who stick around.
Tell me how to do this.
Yeah. I'm horrible at this. Yeah.
What am I doing?
But I have to say, I felt a little bit like it was like, it still had the holiday spirit to it, because these were two very cool people.
Yeah.
With two, one of which had an incredible story.
Yeah.
In Dee and sort of doing this for her daughter, and that's just by itself
fabulous. Finding out after the fact like that she had helped so
all
many
these,
people.
All these people?
Yeah.
That was very, very cool.
Yeah.
And for her to continue that legacy, really inspirational stuff there.
Absolutely.
And then for Keoki, I always love asking the question, do you feel like things are changing?
Yeah.
Because you get real honest answers like we have had in previous podcast with Safe Place, who tell you kind of flat out, like, look, I don't know if it is.
Well, yeah, they see it firsthand, so.
And you have people like Keoki who then tell you, look, what I work in, I see it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is super cool.
So I think you're right. We went in this direction of, like, how to make charity a part of a kid's life, and I think we found some of that.
Sure.
I think the general theme that both of them said was just try to get your kids engaged early, and realize that they have a natural sense of caring for others.
Yeah, and empathy.
And empathy, and that you can translate that empathy into charity eventually. I do see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like kids, first of all, kids take their cues absolutely from their parents.
Oh, yeah.
Of that, there is no question.
Yeah.
The second thing that I think kids do is they are naturally inclined to be kind. Like, they want to be.
They are, like, they kind of seem like good little people.
Yes.
From the instant they're born. Like, no kid is just like a little demon.
Yeah, I mean, there might have been a couple in history.
Sure.
That were born that way.
Sure. But for the most part,
kids
are happy and good, and they want to do good.
I know. And it is the external things that end up
tainting them.
Affecting how they view the world.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, it's really easy if you are setting examples for how you want to give back and how you want to spend your time and your money, showing kids, this is what I think is important.
Mm-hmm.
We have these things, and I think that this is what we need to do to give back, whether it's just saying, you've outgrown these toys, so let's just gather all your toys that you don't use anymore, or go and get some new toys and give to kids who are your age or like you, but they don't have the stuff.
And it was also interesting they both talked about sort of talking about kids like in from different angles. So Dee, her story is that her daughter was older and mm-hmm. she stopped connecting with her.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until after her daughter's tragic accident
yeah.
that she found herself reconnecting
yeah.
with sort of this legacy that her daughter had.
Exactly.
And then for Keoki, talking to him, these were mostly fathers who still had a shot
yeah.
at like their younger being child connected. Being connected yeah. with their kids. So it was, I thought that was really interesting too, and how they both are changing things because of their relationships or because of, you know, where they are.
Yeah,
I thought
exactly.
that was cool. Like, yeah. like Dee is driven. You can tell Dee is driven by what happened to her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she does something every Saturday that's pretty radical.
Yeah.
Just in the name of, you know, her daughter, because I think maybe she feels like that was the way to connect with her.
Well, yeah, and it seems, too, that, like, for her daughter to connect with these people who she met mm-hmm. to say, I'm going to help you do whatever it is that you want or need,
yeah.
for her to go and say, well, everybody needs something,
yeah.
and food is a way for me to help.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am.
Yeah.
Here we are as a group,
yeah.
and we're going to provide this service.
Yeah. I think the general theme of today's podcast, folks, is that in around the holiday season, one of the things we notice, both of these two hit on it, and their services are that way, are just sometimes people need the bare minimum.
Yeah.
They need the base level of support.
Smile. Engage.
Connections.
Talk to me.
Yeah, talk to me. Let me feel like I have worth.
Yes.
And that's what both of these two talked about a lot today.
Yeah.
So it was a very cool podcast. We were super excited to have them. And I personally thought it was cool that we went down the weird roads that we went down with these two.
Hey, I like weird roads.
Yeah, it was very serendipitous for the holidays.
Absolutely.
I do want to talk about some of the upcoming events we have real quick before we sign off.
Absolutely.
Now's one of my most favorite times, and that is the recognition of our volunteers.
Ah, yes.
So over the next 3 months, we'll be recognizing volunteers all over the place. We encourage those who are listening who are volunteers, make sure that you go to our webpage and you download the nomination forms, nominate your favorite volunteers. We go anywhere and everywhere. I think our donut delivery has proven that we will go
Absolutely.
Anywhere and everywhere.
Absolutely.
Certainly to recognize volunteers.
Oh, yeah.
If
we're going to deliver donuts, we're going to go to those links to recognize
we're
volunteers.
We're going
to
do it.
Yeah.
So specifically in Spokane, in King County, and in Thurston County, for those who reside in one of those three areas, we will be having recognition events. The Thurston County recognition event is scheduled for March 9th. Out at the Little Creek Casino. It is the first Friday evening event we've kind of ever done.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. And the King County Committee has not yet found a date, but they think they're going to go with the mid to late February.
Okay.
And they have two sites they're still scoping out. And then, of course, we'll have Spokane in mid-March.
Nice.
And it'll be a nice luncheon for folks. So watch out for those. Nominate your people. And make sure that you recognize people around this holiday season who've done really cool things, not only for the CFT, but for charities. Everywhere.
Absolutely.
So I think that's all I got. What about you?
I like it. This all is right. a nice wrap-up.
This was a nice wrap-up to the whole year.
Hey.
Happy holidays, people. Enjoy yourself, whichever holiday you celebrate, or if you celebrate none, whatever, it's totally cool.
Yeah.
But enjoy yourself, and we hope that you liked this episode of Podcast Review. See you later.